Good morning. It's 8:09. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network. This hour, we'll take a look at the topic of whether or not the prison at the U.S. military base in Guantanamo, Cuba, should continue to hold suspected terrorists, some of whom have been held since the early days of the Bush administration's so-called War on Terror, without trial or access to legal counsel. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell said this just past Sunday on Meet the Press that it's time to close the prison and bring the detainees to the United States to face our criminal justice system. Well, what do you think? You can let us know by calling us at 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number anywhere you can hear the sound of my voice. 263-1890 is the number you should call if you're in Madison, 263-1890. You can also reach us on the Internet. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Our guest this hour is Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine and the author of a forthcoming book, You Have No Rights. Again, you can join our conversation. We'd welcome your comments, 800-642-1234. Good morning, Matt Rothschild. Thanks for coming in today.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Boy, you're the first guest I've had in studio. I had to remember how to turn on the microphone instead of just the telephone thing here.
Well, you've been doing a nice job,
by the way. Thank you. I told my mother not to call you, but obviously she did. It's a serious subject. The early days of the War on Terror, right after 9/11, the United States goes into Afghanistan. We start bringing suspected terrorists out. They were captured, arrested, apprehended, whatever name you want to put on it, and taken to this, among other places, this special prison set up at the Guantanamo base. And of course, there's a whole interesting history of how the United States got to have a naval base in Cuba and keep it, even though the communists controlled the rest of the country, but we won't probably get to that this hour. But the prison itself has become a real point of controversy for the United States and its relationships with other countries in the world, particularly since these prisoners being held there don't have lawyers. There's a military tribunal that's doing whatever they have for trials. And the Bush administration has been sharply criticized by rights groups all over the world for this setup. Now Colin Powell piling on and saying it's time to close Gitmo. Bad week for the Bush administration.
Well, you know, the Bush administration has set up this whole edifice of repression after 9/11. Guantanamo Bay was one of the cornerstones of it. And time and again, the courts, not Congress. Congress has behaved shamefully on all this. But it is the courts that have been dislodging some of the cornerstones of this edifice of repression. And the decision that we had last week about the enemy combatants on unlawful enemy combatants down there was a good one in that regard. And here we have Colin Powell talking about closing Guantanamo. And then there was the decision yesterday, the important decision about holding someone on American soil here in the United States, a fellow named Al-Mari, and whether the government can just do that indefinitely and by claiming that he's an enemy combatant under the Military Commissions Act. So all of these almost all of these unlawful assertions and aggregations of power by the Bush administration are coming under scrutiny and some being deemed illegal by the courts. As far as Colin Powell goes, though, you know, he's always trying to, you know, scurry onto the side of the angels, you know, after the fact. And I just think, you know, not really a tragic figure in a Shakespearean sense, but more and more a pathetic figure. I mean, he was in a position of power, great power, and great influence and a huge reputation, the most popular person in the Bush administration for every day that he was in there, I think. And yet he didn't use that power in any way to withhold the Bush or restrain the Bush administration for waging this crazy war in Iraq, which Powell himself was against. And he could have resigned then and tried to prevent that from happening. Or this whole system of extrajudicial processing that Gonzales and Rumsfeld and Bush and Cheney have instituted. And so now at this late date, Colin Powell says, well, it's time to close down Guantanamo. He's late to the dance. I mean, Amnesty International has talked about this and demanded the closing of Guantanamo for years. So has Human Rights Watch, the two leading human rights organizations in the world. So has the International Red Cross. So has the UN Commission Against Torture. So I don't really applaud Colin Powell at this late date for jumping on the human rights bandwagon. We needed him, those of us who believe in the rule of law and want the United States to obey human rights rather than to besmirch our reputation, which the Bush administration has been doing six ways to Sunday. We wanted Colin Powell to step up to the plate and resign and condemn what this administration has been doing when he was in a position to influence policy. You know, it's fine and well for him to do it now.
The Bush administration, of course, would say that these enemy combatants are dangerous. They're potential terrorists. They threaten the United States. They're not citizens of the United States, or they aren't to be accorded rights because the things that they have done or are alleged to have done are outside the judicial system somehow. It's a really tricky situation in some ways, because in past quote unquote wars, everybody pretty much wore a uniform, carried a flag, was easily identifiable. You could tell who the good guys and the bad guys were, depending on your point of view. I mean, let's not get into that. But in the so-called war on terror, the armies, quote unquote, aren't that identifiable anymore. Ours are. We're still wearing uniforms, carrying a flag and doing that. But the people with whom we're fighting aren't cooperating by identifying themselves so that they can be located and shot, I guess. But the point is that this is a different situation, and the Bush administration was calling for a different set of rules and a different way of handling it.
Well, that's certainly what they say, John. But look, the Geneva Conventions are quite clear on this. Any person, whether that person is deemed an enemy combatant or a prisoner of war, deserves basic standards of treatment and also access to courts. And that has not been happening under the Bush administration. And also, I think we need to question their rationale that this is a totally different situation, never before happened, extraordinary. We need new rules for a new war, whatever Gonzalez has been saying and Cheney's been saying and Bush has been saying. Because, you know, we'll take the example you used. You know, these people aren't using uniforms. Well, guerrillas have been fighting wars without uniforms on for hundreds of years. And in fact, go back to our War of Independence. The British were lined up with their uniforms and, you know, in formation. And, you know, they said, well, what are these Yankee soldiers here? They're not dressed up.
They're shooting at us from behind trees and rocks and fences.
So that goes way back, and it's deep in our rooted history. So are we supposed to have allowed the British there to, you know, capture U.S. soldiers and treat them in an inhumane way because the people who were fighting for the independence of the United States weren't wearing uniforms? I mean, that argument really, I don't think, holds much water.
We're talking about, the genesis of today's program was Colin Powell's comments on Meet the Press on Sunday about his urging the United States government to shut down the prison at Guantanamo in Cuba and bring the detainees to the United States to be processed through the federal justice system, where they would have access to attorneys, habeas corpus, and the rights that accused have in most countries of the world where there are courts and so forth. And it's, of course, he was immediately criticized and dismissed, as pretty much anybody who has criticized this policy has been. And say what you will about Colin Powell in terms of bandwagon jumping, he may be one of the most significant figures of the Bush administration to have finally come out and said something like this, agree or disagree about whether he should have resigned when this first happened. He perhaps felt that he would do more good by staying in the administration and trying to moderate some of their policies, looking at it from his point of view.
Yeah, but
clearly
didn't
happen.
Yeah, I mean, he ended up fronting for them, though, ultimately. I mean, he lost virtually every debate there, and then they wheeled him in front of the cameras to defend the policy, and most notoriously in February of 2003 before the UN body there to talk about these phantom weapons of mass destruction, which he now admits is a huge blot on his career.
Let's see if we can generate some phone calls here. Our phone lines are open, and we welcome your participation in our discussion. What do you think? Is this prison important to the security of the United States? Do we need to keep these detainees down there indefinitely without trial or access to the courts? Is this something that reduces America's moral standing in the world and the moral standing of the war on terror? You can join us by calling 800-642-1234, toll-free, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number anywhere you can hear the sound of this broadcast. We are also available on the internet, talk@wpr.org. Send us an email, talk@wpr.org. And if you're in Madison, you can call our local number, 263-1890. What do you think? Should we close the prison at Guantanamo or not? We'll be back in just a moment to continue our discussion. Good morning. It's 20 after 8 on a Tuesday morning. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After 9 o'clock this morning, an estimated 26 million people worldwide are living with Alzheimer's disease. Kathleen Dunn and her guest will discuss a startling new study that says the number will likely quadruple by 2050. Alzheimer's being discussed after 9 o'clock this morning here on the Ideas Network with Kathleen Dunn. Our guest this hour is Matt Rothschild, editor and of the Progressive magazine. He's the author of the forthcoming book, You Have No Rights. And I'm sure we'll probably talk about that book before the hour is over. And right now, though, we have some people who would like to join our discussion on the telephone. And we'll go first to Nyman in Richland Center. Good morning. You're on the air. Thanks for calling us today.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I would like those prisoners, it's wrong for them to be held as long as they have. Some of them have even committed suicide because of the hopelessness that that condition is, and that should be a prime telling marker that the conditions there are pretty hopeless for the prisoners, and they're held there way too long.
Thank you for that comment.
Thank you.
Nyman's absolutely right. There have been about 40 prisoners, detainees down there who have attempted suicide, and I believe that 4 or 5 have committed suicide down there. One of the reasons that they've tried to commit suicide is their conditions there are so desperate. And I would commend readers and listeners to go to the Amnesty International website or the Human Rights Watch website and find the reports on the treatment of prisoners there. The treatment has just been horrific. I mean, these people have been beaten. One guy has been confined to a wheelchair there. He walked in there. He was perfectly able to walk, and then he had 2 vertebrae broken by the U.S. guards who were jumping up and down on him. And now he's in a wheelchair, paraplegic, and people have been forced to urinate on themselves. They've been urinated on by U.S. guards. They've been put in these terrible restraining devices. They've been hung by their wrists or by their feet. They've been forced to endure harsh temperature conditions, either very hot or very cold temperatures. You know, this is, they've been threatened with rape. They've been threatened to be sent overseas to be tortured. They've had family members threatened, or they were interrogated and said, if you don't behave, we're going to, you know, rape or torture a family member. I mean, this is stuff that is clearly, blatantly against the Geneva Conventions and against our own laws against war crimes. And so, you know, you've got to say this is a huge, huge blot on the U.S. reputation. And that's what Guantanamo Bay has come to symbolize to the world, the lawlessness, the cruelty, the sadism of the Bush administration.
Let's go next to John in Madison. John, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
You know, I really just want to make a comment to the responsibility that America has to set an example as, you know, the perceived leader of the free world. When we have a prison like Guantanamo, you know, being in the forefront of what is the war on terror in some sense, it just sets an absolutely horrible example for what other countries can do in future references to war and enemy combatants. And I really think that's the biggest problem that we face, and it's the perception of other countries to what it is the leader of the free world is already doing with their enemy combatants.
Well, you know, John's absolutely right here, because, you know, the State Department issues a annual human rights report, and it's now laughable because a lot of the things that the State Department criticizes other countries for, like indefinite detention or torture or other forms of cruelty to prisoners, the United States itself is doing. You know, Nicholas Kristof, the columnist of the New York Times, had a great column, I think a week or so ago, where he talked about China's human rights violations and the incapacity now for the United States to exert any leverage on the Chinese for that, because the Chinese government officials would turn to him or turn to anyone in the U.S. and say, well, look at what you guys are doing. And that really diminishes any kind of respect for international standards, much less any clout that the United States have or leverage or moral stature to criticize anybody else.
I recall in the early days of this prison at Guantanamo, there was discussion even by some in the military that our treatment of the so-called enemy combatants would have a negative effect on how American soldiers would be treated if they were captured.
And that, I think, John, was the original complaint that Colin Powell issued within the Bush administration when he was trying to argue against these extrajudicial practices that the Bush administration has been engaging in, whether it's indefinite detention or whether it's torture techniques like waterboarding. If we do that to detainees that we have, then other countries are going to detain Americans. You know, Iran's got some Americans detained right now. And, you know, who are we to say that they can't do to the American detainees what the United States has done to detainees from other countries? And that's a legitimate point.
Let's go next to Doug in Wisconsin Rapids. Good morning, Doug. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning. My suggestion is close Gitmo, give it back to the Cubans. Recognize Cuba as a national sovereignty, do trading with them. But all the folks that are down in Miami go back and forth as they want to. If we can deal with China, if we can give my diesel fuel to the North Koreans so they won't think about lobbing shells or whatever across the border, what the heck is wrong here? The great decider, I think, is a great muddler. He gets everything involved in the things, and he doesn't know exactly how to get in. He knows how to get into it, but he doesn't know how to get out of it. You know, this whole thing with Iraq and Colin Powell. Colin is finally coming around. I said at the time, I said, they're using puppets, you know. This is not even real stuff. It's smoke and mirrors, you know. And what did it take? It took about 3 days into the war, and they found out that there wasn't anything there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for the call.
Well, I agree with Doug about, first of all, U.S. policy toward Cuba. There's been a U.S. embargo of Cuba now for, what, 45, 47 years?
But who's counting?
And it hasn't succeeded in what its intended objective was, which was to bring down the government of Castro. And look, the United States deals with countries with a lot worse human rights records than Cuba. China is one. And so it is ridiculous that we still have this kind of appendix from the Cold War, this vestige remaining, and we should get rid of that. And there is no reason that Cuba shouldn't have Guantanamo Bay. I mean, you know, if, for instance, you know, China had a military base in, you know, the Florida Keys, I mean, I think we would think of that would be pretty weird.
Well, and I don't want to get into the whole history of Guantanamo, but Teddy Roosevelt got it for $2,000 in gold coins, I believe, in probably 1898. It was part of the Spanish-American War when we supposedly liberated Cuba and from the Spanish. And then Fidel Castro cashed a $2,000 check in 1960 that I bet he wishes he hadn't now. And that is how the ownership has stayed in the hands of the United States, and our military has been able to use it as a base ever since. That's the less than Cliff's Notes version of that history, but it's still there. The phone number to call, and we do have lines open, is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. In Madison, it's 263-1890. You know, one of the things that was used as a justification for this is that this was part of the defense of the United States and that these people were dangerous. They were plotting to blow up things in the United States or to kill people in the United States, to cause damage to property and so forth, and that therefore they needed to be detained in a secure facility, and also that they had valuable intelligence to share that we needed to find a way to extract, and that was sort of one of the justifications for this. Maybe one of our callers would care to call in and make that point or expand on it a little bit. 800-642-1234, the number to call in toll free, and 263-1890 is the number to call here in Madison. And we do have a caller on the line, Bill in Madison. Bill, you're up next. Go ahead. Bill, are you still with us? Well, evidently Bill is not there.
John, I just wanted to weigh in on the question of getting intelligence from the detainees. I mean, if it was possible to get, if they had any decent intelligence, you know, when they were detained originally, the relevance of that intelligence now, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years later, has got to be very slim. You have to assume that the United States has extracted whatever intelligence they can get from these guys already, and now just to hold them in perpetuity is just enormously cruel and doesn't make any sense from an intelligence standpoint. And so I don't think the intelligence argument stands up as to whether they are dangerous. I mean, I would think that the United States would be able to bring evidence to bear within U.S. courts, and this is what Colin Powell was suggesting, to sustain the claim of the government that these people are dangerous, and then go through our courts. Our court system has worked well all these years. Why does the Bush administration need to grow a kind of obscene new branch from a poisoned root, you know, of a judicial system? And they're trying to construct this judicial system from scratch when we have a perfectly decent judicial system. I mean, we have a system of jurisprudence, and they are just kind of throwing that prudence out the window.
Let's go next to Mike in Appleton. Mike, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. My comment would be the following. The thing is, we're facing a different type of enemy, which was not considered in the Geneva Convention or in our own laws. We're facing terrorists. I would suggest to your guest that he go to the web and take a look at the way these people act, like, you know, beheading people. So, you know, we're facing a different scenario here.
Well, I appreciate what Mike is saying, and this is the argument that the Bush administration puts forward. But first of all, the Geneva Convention covers everybody. It doesn't cover just people who are in uniform. It doesn't cover just people who are in a regular war. It covers everybody. And the Geneva Convention, let's remember, they came about a lot of the aspects of the Geneva Conventions came about after World War II. Now, World War II, we saw some of the worst human rights violations in the history of mankind. The Nazis, the Holocaust, all sorts of war crimes that were things that the world had never seen before. And so are we supposed to assume now that Al-Qaeda is of a whole different dimension of evil than the evil we saw under the Nazis, which was supposed to be brought under the Geneva Conventions? And I don't think we should give Osama bin Laden that kind of credit, as grotesque as their actions are. There have been grotesque actions like that throughout U.S. history, throughout world history. And the Geneva Conventions are supposed to apply to everybody, regardless of the kind of conflict.
Let's go next to Mike in Madison. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, it's interesting listening to Matt Rothschild because he's a great critic, but he offers no suggestions. The Geneva Conventions is not meant to be used in the type of warfare we are fighting now. There is no provisions in the Geneva Convention that deal with the scenario. What he would like, I guess, is to have our U.S. court systems, potentially with the kind of ACLU and liberal justices he supports and liberal attorneys, if these people were to be released, most of the countries where these people come from will not take them back. They have refused. There are any number right now at Guantanamo that the United States is willing to release, but their countries of origin are refusing to take them back. So apparently Mr. Rothschild would be supportive of releasing these very dangerous individuals, combatants against the United States, in the heartland of this country. You know, that's the craziness. We are still at war. The other thing is the Geneva Conventions does allow for individuals who are considered combatants to be held until the resolution of the war. No one, I don't think even Mr. Rothschild would argue that the war has ended. It continues.
Well, Mike, you know, this war is going to go on forever, perhaps, according to Cheney or to Bush. So these people should be held forever. I mean, it's an undeclared war. These people should be held indefinitely without access to the courts and without, you know, due process. I mean, and you're absolutely wrong about the Geneva Conventions. I mean, Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions says that everyone has access to courts, and outrages upon personal dignity, in particular, humiliating and degrading treatment, that kind of treatment is banned. And so everybody has protections under the Geneva Conventions. Now, you assert that these are very dangerous individuals. Some of them, I'm sure, are. But we are taking that assertion from the Bush administration without that assertion ever being proven in any court of law. So this gives the Bush administration enormous power just to indefinitely detain anybody on their own claim that these people are dangerous. If they are dangerous, bring them to U.S. courts, charge them with plotting against the United States or terrorism or whatever other crime you want to put them up to, and let the courts proceed.
Mike, you have a follow-up?
Well, I guess what Mr. Rothschild assumes is, you know, we're talking about a war scenario. So we're going to bring hundreds and thousands of witnesses from Afghanistan, from the Philippines, from Iraq, from all of these locations to come and testify in a U.S. court system, and assuming that you can even find many of these people. That's the joke of Mr. Rothschild and his argument, is he is trying to apply something to these individuals, which, one, they're now only requesting after we've caught them. Prior to this, they were fighting everything that the United States stands for, and frankly, Western culture stands for. These people are not entitled to the Geneva Conventions, and he knows that. The Geneva Conventions does not apply to terrorists. It did not after World War II. It did not before World War II. And that is a legal principle that's quite clear. So, again, these are combatants. And, yes, if the war continues for another 5 or 6 years, that is what happened. It's not unusual. During the 5 years of World War II, many countries, and even up to several years after, many countries held these individuals. And by the way, those individuals held after World War II did not go into civil courts. They were tried before military courts.
Well, I mean, Mike, you're just wrong on the Geneva Conventions, and I would urge listeners to go to the web and Google the Geneva Conventions and look at Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions, and you'll see that everyone is entitled to their due process rights and to decent treatment. Now, there are only about 400 people there in Guantanamo. How hard is it to bring cases against 400 people if the cases are that strong, if these people are that dangerous? Yes, go to whatever country you have to go to find witnesses if you can substantiate that these people are that dangerous. Otherwise, this gives the President of the United States the power to hold anybody that he claims on his own authority as an enemy combatant forever. And that's indefinite detention. That is essentially disappearing someone. And that goes totally against what our system of justice is supposed to be about.
Let's go back to the phones, and we'll take a call this time from Gene in Eau Claire. Gene, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. My comment is that this system of Guantanamo is so obscene, so immoral, that it just turns one's stomach to think that this is a practice, that torture is a practice of an official policy of the United States. My question to Mr. Rothschild is, why do people generally support this? Why haven't people just have protested against this policy and just seem to accept it, that because it comes from Bush, have accepted this idea that this is a perfectly legitimate legal procedure, and that because our country does it, that because Mr. Bush and Mr. Gonzalez have said that this is the right thing, that they are protecting our country, why have we accepted this so docilely?
Well, Gina, I appreciate the call. I mean, I think people accepted this at the beginning because of fear, understandable, totally rational fear after 9/11. I do think that people are increasingly questioning this policy, people in the United States. There have been protests. I remember going to a protest on the Capitol Square here in Madison where some protesters were dressed up in orange uniforms and to symbolize Guantanamo, and were in cages there to demonstrate to people who were walking by that this is the kind of behavior that the United States is countenancing down in in Guantanamo. So I think the protests are continuing. There is a problem, Gene, though, that I worry about a lot, and it's what I call the American superiority complex, the idea that we're better than everybody, or that essentially we can do no wrong, or that we're the people on the white horses with the white hats. And I think we need to recognize throughout our history that there have been repeated examples of terrible torture and abuse and genocide, whether you want to deal with the Native Americans or slaves or the Spanish-American War, which we talked about before in the Philippines this time. So I think we need to get over the idea that, we are a flawless, blameless nation and superior to everybody else, and recognize that the United States is an empire and acts like an empire, and that empire is antithetical to democracy.
We're talking about the at Guantanamo and whether or not it should be closed. Colin Powell, former Secretary of State in the Bush administration, had suggested over the weekend on Meet the Press that it's time to close the prison, bring these prisoners, the detainees, to the United States and try them in the federal justice system. And he's joining a number of other people who have called for the same thing over the years since that prison was first established. Our guest is Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine. He's also the author of a forthcoming book, You Have No Rights. You're welcome to join us. We have a couple of open phone lines, and we'll get to more calls when we come back. Here's the number, 800-642-1234. It's a toll-free number anywhere you can hear this program, 800-642-1234. Or in Madison, it's 263-1890. You can reach us by email at talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 8:42 on this Tuesday morning. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network. Well, after 10 o'clock this morning, Kathleen Dunn and her guest examine the life and work of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. That's coming up after 10 this morning here on the Ideas Network. Well, this hour we're talking about the Guantanamo prison that's holding the detainees, the enemy combatants, as they've been described. They've been held indefinitely, or they will be held indefinitely. And now Colin Powell, among others, has said we should close this prison. Interestingly enough, John Edwards is the only Democratic presidential candidate, indeed, I think the only candidate I know of, whom we have heard say that he would close Gitmo on his first day in office as president. Do we have any idea where the other candidates stand on this issue, Matt?
Well, I'm sure Dennis Kucinich is for the closing of Guantanamo because he's been a defender of human rights throughout his career. I imagine Mike Gravel will also come out for that. But I don't know about what Hillary Clinton would say to this, because she's always trying to pitch herself, you know, this way and that and toward the middle, so that she can't be construed as being somehow soft on defense or on the military or in the war on terror. As far as Barack Obama goes, I would hope that he would call for the closing of Guantanamo Bay, but I haven't seen his position on this.
We had an email from someone who said that Mitt Romney would double the size of Guantanamo.
Well, you heard in one of those Republican debates the eagerness of the Republican candidates to imprison people without any rights and to, you know, act like they're in the Fox show 24 and torture people at a moment's notice to stop this so-called ticking time bomb scenario, which really doesn't stand up to scrutiny. We had an article, a cover story in the Progressive a year or so ago by Alfred McCoy, the historian at the University of Wisconsin, who totally debunked this whole idea of the ticking time bomb and the utility of torture to defuse such a ticking time bomb if there was one. And so the idea that the Republican candidates are eager to not only proceed with the Bush administration's policy of indefinite detention and torture, but to take it to the next level, I think that should cause us to take a deep breath and step back.
Let's try and get some more phone calls in. This time it's Jeff in Eau Claire. Jeff, it's your turn. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just got a couple things to say. I don't think taking the high ground with these people would stop them from mutilating, torturing, and cutting the heads off our young men when they capture them. They're a brutal enemy, and if our forefathers and our grandfathers that fought World War II had to follow all these different rules and rules of engagement, we'd probably have a swastika and a rising sun over our country.
Well, you know, there were prisoners of war during World War II. There was an enemy of Japan and Germany, and we didn't treat those people the way that we're treating the people in Guantanamo or in Bagram Air Force Base. So the idea that somehow these people are more evil than the Nazis should make us actually ask ourselves, are we falling for the propaganda of the Bush administration? And yes, they have committed heinous crimes, but are they somehow different from anything we've ever seen before in a scale more grotesque than anything we've seen before, and therefore we should just dispense with all laws and conventions that we have to govern our behavior? And I don't think we should just throw those conventions and those laws out the window. We don't need to go over to the dark side, as Dick Cheney said. And our actions are reflecting badly on us around the world. In fact, we're falling into a trap that Osama bin Laden set for us in that he had suggested to Robert Fisk, the reporter for the London Independent, that the United States and the West's reverence for due process and legal niceties would go out the window if they were treated the way that Arabs and Muslims are treated around the world. And all that it would take would be a little pinprick, and then the facade would completely crumble. And God, I hate to think that we're doing that. But look what the United States has done by engaging in this kind of treatment down in Guantanamo or at Abu Ghraib or at Bagram Air Force Base. That has been a recruiting poster for al-Qaeda. So rather than you know, lessening the problem by torturing these people that everyone is assuming down in Guantanamo Bay are de facto guilty, we are making more recruits for al-Qaeda.
Let's go next to Mike and Spitzer. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to make a quick comment on the black eye that this whole thing has given the whole country. Over the weekend, I was speaking with a fellow from Santiago, Chile, and we talked a bit about this and some of the other criminal acts that the administration keeps committing with really utter abandon. And I asked him whether or not the people of Chile view this as an administrative thing, you know, whether it's Bush and his fellows that are the bad guys, or if it's really the whole country. And he said it's the whole country that they look at as being the bad guy now. And when I said, geez, that hardly seems fair, you know, I don't support any of this stuff. And he said, well, you know, it's the United States, and the citizenry should be doing something about it. Why you vote? Why hasn't Bush been impeached? The power is with the people, and they're not doing anything.
Well, Mike, you know, I appreciate the perspective that you have and that your friend from Chile has. Obviously, Chile endured some terrible human rights abuses under Pinochet, where about 5,000 people were killed and tens of thousands were tortured. This with a wink and an eye from Washington. I do think that millions of people overseas were absolutely shattered by the fact that the United States reelected George W. Bush. That was a slap in the face to people around the world who thought, you know, maybe Bush can be elected once, but a second time, given what he's done in Iraq and given all the human rights abuses, why would this civilized country reelect such a person? And secondly, the Military Commissions Act. Congress passed this last year, and the Military Commissions Act countenances trials down in Guantanamo Bay and also gives the president this enormous authority to designate anyone who's not a U.S. citizen an enemy combatant and throw that person into jail indefinitely. This was the law that some Fourth Circuit Appeals Court in Virginia was looking at yesterday when they said that this person, Al-Mari, deserved either to be tried under the U.S. system or to be released because he can't just be held indefinitely under the Military Commissions Act. I mean, the Military Commissions Act denies due process to anyone who is not a U.S. citizen and does ruinous things to our Constitution, as those judges said. So, yes, you know, why should we have to rely simply on judges right now instead of relying on our members of Congress or on ourselves to take action politically to harness enough pressure on our politicians to repeal the Military Commissions Act or, as Mike suggests, to impeach George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Alberto Gonzalez for what they've been doing to our constitutional system? I mean, if you think what Bill Clinton was impeached for and compare that to what these people have been doing to our Constitution, to our system of checks and balances, to our rights and to our liberties, I mean, it just does not compare what Bill Clinton did. And we need, this shouldn't be a partisan thing. This isn't, you know, vengeance for Bill Clinton's impeachment, who I couldn't stand anyway. This is standing up for our constitutional system and for our rights and our liberties.
Let's go next to Paul in La Crosse. Paul, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Guantanamo should have been closed a long time ago, but when you give scared white men absolute power, things like this happen. It should be pointed out that the Council of Europe put out a report, runs about 72 pages, on the detention centers that we kept where we rendered these kinds of people when we were moving them around Europe to have them tortured. And it's quite a detailed report, runs about 72 pages, and you can find it online. The other thing is that yesterday at Court of Appeals, there was a guy from Qatar, I believe the name of the country is, was studying in this country. He was arrested for credit card fraud or something like this. While in waiting trial, he was found to be an enemy combatant or declared an enemy combatant. He was held incommunicado for 18 months, and now he's held in detention without charges being brought against him. And the Bush administration says, yeah, this is okay, we can do this. And the Court of Appeals says, no, you can't. The Bush administration has been beaten on every one of these cases as they've made their way through the court system. Unfortunately, the guys in Guantanamo are having a really tough time down there. But, I mean, like I said, when scared white men have absolute power, things like this happen.
When anyone has absolute power, things like this happen, Paul. But I agree with you on the Council of Europe and the disappearances that the United States has been using. I mean, it's been grabbing people and sending them to countries in Europe and to other countries around the world to be tortured. And I'm not going to let the Bush administration put some benign name on this, like extraordinary renditions. This is disappearing people. This is torturing people. And it is a grotesque violation of our laws. And also, you mentioned, Paul, this case of Al-Mari and the Virginia Court of Appeals there, which is a very conservative court of appeals. But in this panel, this three-judge panel, granted two were Democrats, they said that to allow the president to take this person away from the regular court process and slap the enemy combatant label on him and put him in solitary confinement in a military brig where he has no access to justice would have disastrous consequences for the Constitution and the country, and would so alter the constitutional foundations of a republic that we won't be able to recognize this country anymore. I wonder, and I worry, though, whether the whole Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals will overturn that, or whether the U.S. Supreme Court will overturn that, because the last decision that related to this was the Hamdan decision, which was a 5-3 verdict with Justice John Paul Stevens writing for the majority, that said these military commissions act, the military commissions down in Guantanamo were not up to snuff and needed to correspond with Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions, which says all minimal protections of civilized peoples should be granted to people down at Guantanamo in the court proceedings. What worries me is that in that decision, Justice Stephen Breyer, usually considered one of the liberals, said that he was most troubled by the fact that there wasn't congressional input and oversight of this. And now we have the Military Commissions Act, and maybe Stephen Breyer is going to say, well, that's good enough. And then with Chief Justice Roberts weighing in, the whole court could decide, well, this is okay. And if that happens, then we're really in a lot of trouble.
We have an email from Dennis in Hudson who writes, I am tired of hearing people call in and say that we are fighting a different kind of enemy. Of course we are. The trouble is the Bush guys do not know how to fight that enemy. I am also tired of people calling in and saying that we are detaining dangerous people. If they were known to be dangerous, they would already have been charged, tried, and sentenced. How do callers in the middle of Wisconsin know they are dangerous? Is it possible that they are detained just to make such callers believe the Bush team is actually doing something to fight the terrorists?
Well, Dennis has two good points there. I mean, there are other countries who have fought terrorism. I mean, India is a democracy and fights terrorism. Britain has been fighting terrorism for a long time without throwing out the Constitution. And yes, this idea or their system of jurisprudence or, you know, the Magna Carta. You know, this idea that there are dangerous people, as Dennis suggests in his email, means that we are just taking as a given on face value what the Bush administration asserts. And the reason we have a system of government here that has more than one branch to it is to allow those assertions to be judged by someone in the judicial branch to see whether, or a jury to see whether it holds water or not. Otherwise, we're giving the power of a king to the president.
Let's take another call. This time we'll go to Ivan in Milwaukee. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to say that we definitely should close Guantanamo. Heck, we should have never opened it in the first place. You know, one of the foundations of the American society is the concept of justice. And as soon as we go out and say that there's a group of people that are so dangerous that our justice system can't handle them, then terrorists have already won. And I just don't believe that's true. And then as far as the Geneva Convention goes, one of the reasons that the current version of it so broadly defines what an enemy combatant is and who should be protected by it is exactly because of us. I mean, beginning of World War II, we interned how many hundred thousands of innocent Japanese, and then at the end of the closing days of World War II, we instead of admitting prisoners of war, we started defining people as disarmed enemy soldiers to avoid having to follow the Geneva Convention. So, we're pretty good at sort of messing with definitions just to get our way. That's all I got to say, all right?
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I appreciate Ivan's perspective on that. I mean, the Geneva Conventions is all-encompassing. It does cover everybody. I do want to pick up on something that Ivan said, and that is the idea of Bush's idea of justice, because you could Google whitehouse.gov and look up a phrase, bring to justice, that Bush uses. And it doesn't mean bring to our courts and determine whether this person is guilty or not. When Bush uses the term bring to justice, it's frontier justice. It is, we're going to go kill people and we're going to bring them to justice. And while that may resonate with people who recognize how serious the offenses are that Al-Qaeda committed, the crimes that Al-Qaeda committed against us, the idea that that is his view of justice, I think should make us wonder, whether he really respects our system of justice or not. We should wonder whether he respects our system of justice when he countenances torture in waterboarding. We should wonder whether he respects our system of justice when he constructs these kangaroo courts down in Guantanamo.
Matt, you've got a new book coming out, You Have No Rights. When is that going to be out?
Well, I got some advanced copies. I got one right here in my paws, but the release date is July 4th. And this is a chronicle, really, of 82 stories of individuals whose rights have been trampled on during the Bush age. And also it includes an introduction where I try to describe the various pillars of the edifice of repression that Bush has constructed over the years.
We've talked a lot about how bad Guantanamo is and the issues surrounding that this hour, and we've only got about a minute left. Clearly, we do have a problem with terrorism in the world, and we have to find some way to deal with it. Is there a way to deal with this and still keep our self-respect and our system of laws and justice?
Yeah, I think we've got to attack the problem of terrorism in an intelligent way, with law enforcement, using the tools of law enforcement that we have. And, we cannot create more terrorists while we're trying to prevent terrorism. And that, unfortunately, is what the Bush administration has been doing, first by waging this illegal war in Iraq and then by the terrible mistreatment of people at Abu Ghraib and at Bagram Air Force Base and Guantanamo Bay. We are doing Osama bin Laden's bidding when we act like Osama bin Laden. We shouldn't go down that road. We're falling into his trap, and we've got to get out of that.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine and the author of the forthcoming book, You Have No Rights. Leo Duran produced this morning's program, and he also handled on-air production duties for us. And if you would like a copy of it, it is program 612C, as in cat. You can call 800-747-7444. That's the radio store, and order yourself a CD. I'm John Munson, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.